For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. George Santos matters because Kevin McCarthy matters, because if Kevin McCarthy ousts George Santos, Kevin McCarthy may never become Speaker of the House because George Santos will not be there to vote for him. But if Kevin McCarthy protects George Santos, Kevin McCarthy then owns George Santos for the rest of his natural life. Which is why, strategically, the Democrats should not try to prevent George Santos from being seated in the new Congress. Either way McCarthy plays it, he will lose. Let Santos hang from the collective Republican neck as long as possible, dividing them and overshadowing their agenda and undercutting their farcical investigations of corruption, while Congressman Catch Me If You Can sucks all the air out of the Capitol. Especially since the Republican district attorney of Nassau County, New York, the center of the district that elected this charlatan, announced late yesterday she is investigating Santos. His lies, she says, quote, are nothing short of stunning. If a crime was committed in this county, we will prosecute it. Yes, do that. If a Republican DA is going to investigate a Republican congressman tied to the leader of the Republicans in the House for wholesale scale lying to get elected, Democrats, get out of the Republicans' way. Shut up and invest in popcorn. All of which is why a former Republican congressman went on the Newsmax propaganda feed late yesterday and suggested in passing the most Kevin McCarthy way out of this imaginable. Get George Santos to vote for McCarthy for Speaker and then get him to resign from the House. The problem with that genius scheme, of course, is that there is not the slightest sign that this con man is ready to admit he has lied at all, never mind the slightest sign that he would be willing to quit before or after he is sworn in. As of his most recent public interview, it is now infamous Tulsi Gabbard interview on Fox Tuesday night, George Santos is still insisting that those of both parties screaming about his lies about his religion, his lie that his grandparents escaped the Holocaust, his lie that his mother escaped the World Trade Center on 9/11, his lie that his employees died at the Pulse terrorist attack, his lies about his finances, his lies about his sexual orientation, his lies about his employment, his lies about his education, his lies about his time spent in Brazil, his lies spent about his time spent in Russia, his lies about his criminal record, if any, his lies about buildings he does or does not own, his lies about companies that do or do not exist, his lies about whether he was a landlord or a deadbeat tenant, his lies about his dog rescue, that all these complaints he has been able to dismiss as, quote, nitpicking. We are still at the stage where, caught lying about his supposed Jewish heritage, he came back and, as you know, insisted he never said he was Jewish. He said he was Jew-ish. And then the newspaper The Forward produced his campaign position paper on Israel and the Middle East, and Santos's third sentence begins, quote, as a proud American Jew. So he lied, then covered up the lie with a different lie. And we still haven't even reached the tertiary stage of George Santos disease, where there is a third lie to cover up the first two lies that didn't work.
I've seen how socialism destroys people's lives because my grandparents survived the Holocaust.
This is not a man even approaching the building that contains the hallway that leads to step one of the 12-step program for compulsive liars. This is also not a man poised to follow some script that Kevin McCarthy just hands him. In fact, the only thing he seems to have actually done about this bottomless pit of stupid, these impossible-to-escape lies, is to underscore the power he, Santos, holds over McCarthy. On December 18th, Santos tweeted, quote, we have the opportunity of a lifetime to deliver real results for the American people. We must give the gavel to Kevin McCarthy to stop the disastrous policies the Dems have pushed the last 2 years. I encourage my colleagues to join me. Our country depends on it. We must, in caps, give the gavel to Kevin McCarthy. That was the 18th. No later than the 23rd, George Santos deleted that tweet. And if deleting that tweet does not reek of pressuring McCarthy for his support, I do not know what could. And McCarthy can't just back away in any direction from this twerp. It is barely 6 weeks since he himself spoke glowingly and proudly and boastfully and credit-grabbingly about the election of George Santos. And he did all this boasting to the Republican-Jewish Coalition's 2022 Leadership Conference in Vegas, for God's sake.
I really want to talk about who's the makeup of this new majority. You heard from some of all already. You know, with Max Miller in Ohio, George Santos in New York, and you had David Kustoff from Tennessee get reelected, he introduced him. Do you realize we have the largest Republican Jewish caucus in more than 24 years? Not bad, huh?
Not anymore, you don't. Say, Sparky, when you bought this scamster, did they give you the receipt? Or did they give him the receipt? Because one of you sure as hell owns this guy and the insolvable mess he has created. And of course, just as much as Santos is nowhere near admitting, let alone atoning for his sins, nor is anybody in the Republican Congressional Caucus near admitting they have got to get out from under this albatross as quickly as possible. Do not be fooled by the grandstanding by the Republican reps from the adjoining districts. Anthony Desposito and Nick LaLotta called for ethics investigations of Santos, and that confirms they are ready to seat him and then turn him over to a Republican-led committee that will first have to ask somebody what the word ethics means. And especially do not be fooled by the impact of the Tulsi Gabbard interview with Santos. That was the perfect fix, really. It was genius by Fox News. You must remember that Republicans not only still believe Tulsi Gabbard was a Democrat, in fact, that she was a liberal Democrat, but they believed she is still at least a liberal, and thus the fact that the grilling on Tucker Carlson's show was done by her and not Carlson or another genuine Fox fascist imbues that interview with a kind of magical quality. Republican reaction to the Gabbard interview followed along the lines of the tweet by the Indiana Congressman Jim Banks. Banks didn't slam Santos. Banks didn't demand Santos resign. Banks didn't mention Santos at all. He wrote just four words. Good job, Tulsi Gabbard. It is my fervent belief that Republicans in office and just the civilians at home who burn their incense at the altar of their cult can embrace the Banks reaction while simultaneously also embracing the Marjorie Trailer Park Greene reaction, in which she complained about Gabbard not giving Santos any, quote, grace for having admitted his lies. And she added that Gabbard, quote, says she is a former Democrat. They can all believe, in many ways, they need to believe, both that the Gabbard interview was cathartic and it relieves them of any of Santos's ethical taint, and at the same time that the Gabbard interview is just another Democratic attack on the fundamental meaning of life. He's a Republican, he got elected, therefore he is above criticism for anything. And don't get me started about Gabbard's motivation in all this. A, she smells a television job, and B, I'll just repeat a tweet reply from an attorney named Hallie Spite. Quote, she's pissed because he got more money from the Russians than she did. Unquote. Of course, that highlights what is next on this wonderful, heaven-sent to the Democrats, endless cornucopia of Republican corruption, complete with its own easy-to-remember one-word catchphrase, Jew-ish. What highlights what's next? What's next is the money. The website Semaphore summed it up neatly. Let me quote them. When he first ran for Congress in 2020, Santos, who appeared to have suffered from financial trouble for much of his adult life, filed disclosures listing no assets and a salary of $55,000. But the filings from his most recent run suggest he came into sudden riches, making between $3.5 million and $11.5 million from a company he founded called the DeVolder Organization in 2021. He loaned his campaign more than $700,000. DeVolder was dissolved in September 2022 after failing to file an annual report. Given that timing, Representative-elect Dan Goldman, Democrat, New York, has raised the question of whether it was created merely to funnel illegal campaign donations, unquote. Faced with other reporting that those donations included large sums from the cousin of a Russian oligarch, George Santos actually talked to Semaphore on the record and tried to explain how at DeVolder he could make up to $400,000 merely by serving as a go-between in the private sale of a yacht. And then he added, quote, I don't dance to the tune of Congressman-elect Dan Goldman. If it was requested of me to produce any documentation from this organization, I have no problem doing so to people with proper authority, not to authoritarian members of Congress that think they have authority over their peers, unquote. Respect my authority. George seems ready to deal, huh? That quote was before the DA announced her investigation, and one of the things the DA will be looking to, no doubt, is a Santos interview from last March in which he helpfully brought up Russia, money, spending money in Russia, and just in case we needed to ratchet this whole thing up to another level, he brought up how frequently he traveled to Moscow to spend money in Russia.
You show up with $100 and you get 6,000 rubles. And you can do a lot with 6,000. I mean, I've been to Moscow many times during my career. I mean, you stay at the St. Regis on the Red Square, right off the Red Square, next to the Gum Museum, which is the most expensive shopping mall in the world.
Once again, Democrats, stay out of this. Make all the noises of propriety you need to, but do not raise an objection to seating George Santos. Resolving this could kill Kevin McCarthy's career, no matter which way he turns, and split the Republican Party. And all you have to do is stand to the side and give a nice, polite golf clap. I mean, the ex-Georgia congressman who suggested getting Santos to vote for McCarthy for speaker and then getting him to quit, Doug Collins, also asked yesterday, rhetorically, if they were all sure Santos really is a Republican. George Santos. The guy's name even sounds like Ron DeSantis. Just let McCarthy choose between the tiger or the other tiger. Then Kevin McCarthy is going to have to make that choice. Because while a Supreme Court ruling in 1969 limited Congress's ability to actually not admit an elected representative or senator, limited it to violations of the legal requirements, age, citizenship, residency, buried in this avalanche of lies, lies to cover lies, and the application of the suffix ish, while it is clear Santos is older than the minimum House age of 25, there are clearly reasons to doubt his residency and indeed whether or not he is actually a citizen of the United States. So, yeah, I know we don't need one more Republican sociopath, one more Manchurian candidate who looks like they made him in a laboratory to be all the things a Republican would need to be to win on Long Island, from the gay part to the Jewish part to the Hispanic part to the dog rescue part. But Democrats alone are not going to get him tossed out of the House anyway, nor does it appear that anybody, Democratic or Republican, is going to get this guy to stop digging. Let him dig. Kevin McCarthy is now the man who used to come out on the Ed Sullivan Show while that saber dance music played, and he would start spinning a dozen or so of these long poles and then carefully balance big dinner plates atop the poles and continually jump from one pole to the other, trying to keep the poles and the plates spinning and not crashing to the floor live on national television. If you need one more piece of evidence about this, Santos's spokeswoman has made a statement, quote, "As a millennial, George did what he had to in order to evade smear campaigns put forth by elitist organizations like the New York Times." Gabrielle Lipsky went on that the paper, quote, "shamefully launched open season against the first openly gay person to be elected to Congress," end quote. George Santos is not the first openly gay person to be elected to Congress. George Santos is not even the first openly gay Republican to be elected to Congress. And given his recent marriage to a woman, we don't even know about the gay part. Santos's spokeswoman responded to Santos's lies by herself lying. This is all Kevin McCarthy's show, Democrats. They are his polls. They are his China. It is his spinning. Your role is to buy him more plates. Thank you, Nancy Faust. Still ahead, why yes, I am running for CEO of Twitter. Thank you for asking. The old one makes worse persons, and not just for tanking his own companies. Where did we get this guy, Eric Adams? Did my city not suffer enough with Giuliani and Bloomberg and de Blasio? Now the mayor is literally saying it's not Big Brother watching you, Big Brother is protecting you. And in things I promise not to tell, things I have told repeatedly. My first professional sportscast, July 10th, 1979, not only does it still exist, I will play it for you, and I will not be offended if you do not stick around all the way to the end of the podcast to listen to it. That's next. This is Countdown.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States.
In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Countdown with Keith Olbermann.
Still ahead on Countdown, do you have anything left from your first day at your first job? I do. I will share. First, in each edition of Countdown, we feature a dog in need. You can help. Every dog has its day. This nightmare continues here at the New York Pound. The kill list reached 25 dogs at Christmas, and three of them died yesterday. Now added to that list, Honey. Honey is a 17-month-old, 12-pound mix, a boy. He looks like a Maltipoo. He's house-trained, he's well-behaved, but he is anxious around strangers, and he'll need more training to get along smoothly with other dogs. Pledges to get him into the hands of an experienced rescue, that's probably the best course of action for Honey. Incredibly, Honey was left at the pound to die by his, quote, humans on Christmas Eve. How could you do that and live with yourself afterwards? Let's try to make it up to him. I thank you, and Honey thanks you. Postscripts to the news, some headlines, some updates, some snarks, some predictions. Dateline Washington, Congressman Jamie Raskin of Maryland and the January 6th committee has announced he is about to begin chemo after having been diagnosed with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, which he describes as, quote, a serious but curable form of cancer. We pray so. Dateline Washington, headline from the latest January 6th committee interview transcripts. Cassidy Hutchinson testified that Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows, routinely burned documents in his office. When will Meadows cut a deal? He is neck high already in this. Dateline Grand Rapids, Michigan. What can push back against the increasing political terrorism from the right? Well, things like the 19 years in prison given out yesterday to the co-leader of the fascist plot to kidnap Governor Whitmer of Michigan. That is what Barry Croft got. Tuesday, his fellow terrorist Adam Fox got 16 years. Dateline San Francisco. Yes, I am running for CEO of Twitter. My argument? I can't do worse than this guy. Some of the items on my platform, a free share of Tesla with every tweet, keeping the Piers Morgan account hacked because the fake tweets are less offensive than his usual ones, and hiring Maggie Haberman to do the next Twitter files. And Dateline Newport News, Virginia, Bill Cosby says he's going to tour this year, a comedy tour. There's so much fun to be had in this storytelling I do, he says. No truth rumors that all who attend will be given drinks personally prepared by Mr. Cosby.
This is SportsCenter. Wait, check that. Not anymore. This is Countdown with Keith Olbermann.
In sports, pretty strange move, even for the always strange Las Vegas, formerly Oakland, formerly Los Angeles, formerly Oakland, formerly Los Angeles Raiders. Probably outside the playoff picture, but not yet eliminated. The Raiders have benched quarterback Derek Carr. They say they will use the last regular season game to look at his backup, Jarrett Stidham. It probably means Carr won't be back with the Raiders next year. And remember what Raiders owner Al Davis, the late Al Davis, used to say, my team's quarterback must go down, and he must go down hard. College bowl season, and Oklahoma and Florida State play in the Cheez-It Bowl in Orlando tonight amid controversy. Carter Carrolls of the Tallahassee Democrat writes that the sponsor has informed him, quote, "There is no such thing as Cheez-Its. One Cheez-It is a Cheez-It. Two or more of the Cheez-It are called Cheez-It crackers, not Cheez-Its." Two problems. A, I don't think that's true. And more importantly, B, if you are debating the correct plural for the product of the bowl game sponsor, the game itself is probably not worth watching. They sent me to record the speech. To record the speech, I had to balance atop a garbage can and stick my microphone into a public address system speaker hanging from the ceiling. Coming up in things I promise not to tell. First, the daily roundup of the miscreants, morons, and Dunning-Kruger effect specimens who constitute today's worst persons in the world. The Bronze, the New York Times. It has published a long, quote, opinion, unquote, piece on the relative merits of three books about Trump. One is by Peter Baker, another is by Robert Draper, the third is by Maggie Haberman. Now, what do those three have in common? Well, they all write for the New York Times. What else do they have in common? Well, they all withheld news from the New York Times and its readers during an anti-democracy crisis until each author got their own book advance. And now their relative merits are being covered in the New York Times. I believe the technical term for this is log rolling. Runner-up, the Anthony from the Twilight Zone of Twitter, Elon Musk. "Almost no one seems to realize," he tweeted, "that the head of bioethics at NIH, the person who's supposed to make sure Fauci behaves ethically, is his wife." You know, a normal mind writes that out, and before they hit send, they think, huh, almost no one seems to realize something. Is it possible that's because it's not true? And in this case, it's not true, Elon. Dr. Christine Grady runs the chief of the Department of Bioethics at the NIH Clinical Center. Her husband is Dr. Anthony Fauci, and Dr. Fauci is the head of the NIH's National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Different organizations, different buildings, different power structures. Next COVID conspiracy rumor that the dim-witted Musk can spread, that Dr. Grady is the sister of Ghislaine Maxwell. She's also not that. But our winner, New York's mayor, Eric Adams, the man who brought you such quotes as, "I thank God I'm the mayor right now," and "there is no way God created me for this moment if he did not believe this was my moment." He may have topped himself defending his push to cover New York in facial recognition devices. He told an interviewer, quote, "It blows my mind how much we have not embraced technology, and part of that is because many of our electeds are afraid. Anything technology, they think, oh, it's a boogeyman. It's Big Brother watching you." No, Big Brother is protecting you. I'm willing to bet Eric Adams does not know exactly what Big Brother is, or anything about the premise of Orwell's 1984, which you may have heard this. In 1984, the premise is the state gradually gets to enslave everybody by convincing them it's not Big Brother watching you, Big Brother is protecting you. Mayor Eric, you're trying to make me miss Bill de Blasio, aren't you? Today's worst person in the world!
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The number one story on the countdown and things I promised not to tell, and it is hardly that today. In fact, it is more accurately show and tell. There is no particular excuse for this, except for the fact that I found these the other day. They are three sportscasts I did in the first 10 weeks of my professional career, from July through September of 1979. And to me, the fun part of this is hearing the old-timey names and a few events that are still talked about, like the night of the infamous disco demolition in Chicago, and one of the many nights Nolan Ryan bid for a no-hit game. And then there's reporting on the retirement of one of my favorite players, and something I could not physically do today that I did that day. You don't have to listen to all of them. I won't take it personally. You don't have to listen to any of them, in fact. But in their defense, they're each just 2 minutes long. The first one was on the morning of Tuesday, July 10th, 1979. The 1,000 stations on the United Press International Radio Network, UPI Audio, were expecting to hear our sports director, Sam Rosen, their usual morning man, to appear on their feed for the 9:45 a.m. sportscast. But at about 8:48 a.m., Sam had told the new guy, me, that I wasn't just training and watching him do all those sportscasts, I would be doing the 9:45. Surprise! What you will hear first is the talk-up. Newscasters, business reporters, sportscasters would tell the stations live that they were there and that their broadcast was coming up exactly 10 seconds from Mark.
Stations, live sports will begin, preceded by a one-second tone, coming up 10 seconds from Mark.
Incidentally, I never figured out who Mark was. Here it is. Here's the sportscast.
Good morning. Three members of the Houston Astros named this morning to manager Tommy Lasorda's National League pitching staff for next Tuesday's All-Star Game. Top winner Joe Niekro, tapped by Lasorda, along with Joaquin Andujar and reliever Joe Sambito. Rounding out the staff, veteran Steve Carlton of Philadelphia and Gaylord Perry of the Padres, Steve Rogers of Montreal, the Cubs' Bruce Sutter, and Cincinnati's Mike Lacoste. And speaking of the All-Stars, you would think Don Baylor and his 80 RBI would be a shoe-in for the AL outfield. Baylor drove in another run last night as the Angels whipped Boston 6-0, but matter of fact, he placed 14th in the voting.
The most important thing for me right now is just to win on this ball club. A lot of people brought up the All-Star thing, and I can't do anything about that, you know, the voting and things, but I can do something about this ball club. You know, if I produce on this club, we'll win.
When they did last night as Nolan Ryan struck out 12, that puts California a half game up on Texas in the West. Elsewhere in the American, the Orioles' lead is up to 3 in the East. They beat Oakland by the score of 7-3. It was the Blue Jays 7, Milwaukee 1, Minnesota over Detroit 5-3 as Jerry Kuzman won his 11th. The White Sox stopped Texas 5-4 and Cleveland over KC 8-2. The New York Yankees were off, but they made an important move move for their pennant hopes, the activation of injured relief pitcher Rich Gossage. Over in the National, Montreal's Eastern lead is up to 5.5. Bill Lee blanked the Dodgers 3-0. Phillies over the Giants 4-2. The Cardinals beating Cincinnati 6-3 and Chicago 7, Atlanta 4. At the Pan Am Games in San Juan, a big upset in the 800-meter run. American James Robinson shocking Cuban Olympic champ Alberto Juan Turina. The U.S. boosted its gold medal total to 81. Both the men's and women's basketball teams remain undefeated. And for the second time in his career, crack Montreal Canadiens goaltender Ken Dryden has called it quits. Dryden going back to the law books at the age of 31. This time it looks permanent, though the Habs say the big goalie is welcome back at any time. From the sports desk of United Press International, I'm Keith Olbermann.
What, no NFL camp news? Today that whole sportscast would be nothing but NFL camp news. Well, it's not bad, considering I was on 20 years old and I was going on no sleep. I was having an out-of-body experience, and the tape is running a little fast. I should tell you about that tone that starts each one of these. The tone was used for automated stations. That would be the signal for them to take the network, as it were, and put me on their automated stations. And it had another automated quality to it. The guy who succeeded me once went in there a little impaired, and when the tone generator did not generate the tone because somebody had switched it off, instead of just doing his sportscast anyway, he got up and left. They threw him back in the booth, and somebody shouted, "Talk!" They fired him not long after. So that's Tuesday, my first sportscast as a professional. By Friday, I was on my own. I was anchoring the night shift at UPI, 6 sportscasts, 1 hour, starting at 5:45. The big news that day was what had happened the night before at the Tigers-White Sox doubleheader, when the Sox tried to tap into the nation's sincere anti-disco zeitgeist by blowing up a bunch of disco records between games. What, as the kids say, could possibly go wrong?
After pondering the evidence for the better part of the day, American League President Lee McPhail has forfeited the second game of last night's Chicago-Detroit doubleheader to the visiting Tigers. A between-games anti-disco promotional event escalated into big trouble. An estimated 7,000 fans stormed the field and wreaked havoc. The second game never got underway. Sox center fielder Chet Lemon was upset by the forfeit, but as he told reporters, there was more to worry about last night than who won and who lost.
Well, you know, there's really nothing I could do or say anything like that. I don't even think about it. You know, it's just one of those things that happened. It was out of my control. I'm just happy that I can go out today and play baseball.
I think we're lucky that every ball player is able to walk around and nobody got hurt.
Everybody, just not only the ball players, but anybody that was fortunate enough to get away from here last night without getting hurt or anything like that that has to be fortunate. You know, it happens. You know, it's a shame, but it happens. And it's just the way the whole system is.
Detroit and Chicago are scheduled for a plain old night game later today. Meanwhile, the disc jockey who led the anti-disco stunt refused to take the blame for the incident. Steve Dahl said it was not his fault. He claims the media have distorted the event. In other baseball news, the Cincinnati Reds have extended manager John McNamara's contract. McNamara will be skipper in Cincinnati at least through the 1980 season. It'll be the United States and Puerto Rico tonight playing for the basketball gold medal at the Pan American Games, and the U.S. will have Coach Bobby Knight at courtside. Knight today got a postponement of his assault trial until the 22nd of next month. Also this evening, the American women's hoop squad goes for gold against Cuba. In action this afternoon, the U.S. took golds in both men's and women's tennis doubles, and Mel Purcell took the men's single title. In golf, Ed Doherty is all alone atop the Greater Milwaukee Open. He shot a 6-under-66 today, one stroke ahead of Vic Regalado. And at the Women's Open in Connecticut, Sandra Palmer and Debbie Massey share the lead. That is early in the second round. From the sports desk of United Press International, I'm Keith Olbermann.
I love Chet Lemon there saying it wasn't him. It was the system, man. It's the system. By the way, guess who was the organist at Comiskey Park for that disco demolition night for the White Sox and Tigers on that night in August of 1979? Yes, our own Nancy Faust. All right, so I think that was the 6:45 sportscast on the night of the 13th. Maybe it was the 7:45. But by 9:45, disco demolition night aftermath was no longer the lead story. In an early evening start in Anaheim, a man whose name is now inseparable from no-hitters was, when my 10:45 sportscast began, on the verge of throwing another one.
Through eight innings at Anaheim, Nolan Ryan of the California Angels has a no-hitter going against the New York Yankees. Ryan's no-hitter preserved with one out in the eighth inning when Jim Spencer lined a dying quail to center field that the official score ruled an error. Again, Ryan bidding for his fifth no-hitter of his career. He leads the Yankees 3-0 going into the ninth inning. An American League final tonight, Minnesota beat Toronto 6-4 in the National. The Padres came up with three in the ninth to beat Montreal 7-5 in the first of a doubleheader. The Mets got two RBI from Steve Henderson as they won the opener of their twinighter with the Giants 7-6. The home run bats propelled the Braves to a 13-4 mashing of Pittsburgh. Jeff Burrows had a grand slam and Bob Horner hit two homers, and the Phillies beat the Dodgers 3-2. American League President Lee McPhail has declared a forfeit in the second game of last night's scheduled Detroit-Chicago doubleheader. The nightcap was never played because thousands of fans streamed onto the field during a promotional event after the opener. AL spokeswoman Phyllis Merridge reads President McPhail's official decision.
It was the judgment of the umpires that it was not possible to start the second game of the July 12th doubleheader because of inadequate crowd control and damage to the playing field, both of which are the specific responsibility of the home team. It is therefore required of me that I declare this game forfeited to Detroit by a score of 9-0.
At the Pan Am Games in San Juan, the U.S. women took the silver medal in basketball, dropping their final game to Cuba 91-86 this evening. Meanwhile, America's Mary Decker took the 1,500-meter race, and Debbie LaPlante won the gold in the 100-meter low hurdles. This afternoon, the U.S. took gold medals in both men's and women's tennis doubles, and Mel Purcell won the gold in men's singles. In golf, it's Geralyn Britz leading the pack at the U.S. Women's Open in Connecticut. She shot a 2-under par today and has the lead by two strokes after the second round. And Ed Doherty leads the Greater Milwaukee Tournament. He has a one-stroke lead. From the sports desk of United Press International, I'm Keith Olbermann.
That's a lot of information for a two-minute sportscast, kid. Nolan Ryan, by the way, did not get his fifth no-hitter that night. An Angels infielder fumbled a Thurman Munson ground ball to start the ninth inning. Then Greg Nettles popped out. Then Reggie Jackson got the first Yankee hit of the game. And a moment later, a sacrifice fly took away Ryan's shutout, too. It was the second of five times Nolan Ryan lost a no-hitter in the ninth. He would get his fifth no-hitter 2 years later. He got seven for his career and lost five in the ninth. Amazingly, Thurman Munson would be dead just 20 days later. There would be moments at Yankee Stadium the rest of that year that were not overwhelmed by the shock of his death, but they were very few. On September 16, 1979, the great Yankees and Athletics pitcher Jim Catfish Hunter was honored in a retirement ceremony, and I got to cover it, and then I got to hear my reports on the air on one of the New York radio stations I grew up listening to.
Honored Catfish Hunter, who's retiring at the end of the season. Keith Olbermann reports.
After receiving gifts, serious and comical, and the praise of his teammates, his manager, and the fans, Catfish Hunter marked his retirement ceremony by noting the important people who could not attend.
Three people that I wish could have been here today. Scott did sign me.
Leaves the Yankees to retire to his farm in Hartford, North Carolina. Keith Olbermann at Yankee Stadium, New York.
He's retiring at the end of the season, and Keith Olbermann has details.
The Yankees showered their retiring right-hander with gifts, a trip to Hawaii, a pickup truck, and even a brown elephant. After his teammates and the fans thanked him, it was time for Catfish Hunter to do the thanking.
And I'd like to thank you for all the gifts I received today. And thank God for giving me strength. Let me be a ball player. What I always wanted to be. Thank you very much.
The 30-minute ceremony was the symbolic end of Hunter's 15-year Major League career, a career that has to date featured 224 victories. Hunter says he'll miss his teammates, but he's missed his family even more and plans to become a gentleman farmer in North Carolina. Keith Olbermann at Yankee Stadium in New York.
Two things about that. It was such a different time. I got to the ballpark early that Sunday morning, and perhaps an hour before the ceremony, I saw Jim Hunter sitting by himself in the dugout. I approached him for an interview, explaining who I was and saying if he was trying to take in the last day and just contemplate things, I was sorry to have intruded, and of course we could skip the interview. He laughed and said, "Nah, I'm just sitting here waiting for them to give me them gag gifts." There was no PR person, no entourage to keep me away, just him. I tried to get him to repeat his most famous quote, this famous soundbite that all of us who ever heard it kept repeating to each other for years, where he insisted his marm was just fine, which was the answer to the question, Catfish, how's your arm? Marm feels real good. And that leads me to the second postscript. There was also no malt box. A malt box is an audio feed from a live event at a press conference or off something like a public address system while a, you know, player is retiring and giving his farewell speech. I asked the Yankees PR man if there was somewhere I could plug in to record Hunter's address. Nope. I said, you don't have a malt box for the Catfish Hunter retirement speech? Nope. Could I get on the field and just tape my microphone to the PA mic and then stay crouched over with the photographers? Nope. So I had to get creative. I was sent to get the speech. Those clips of Catfish Hunter talking about his teammates and supporters, reverberating through the vast caverns of Yankee Stadium over the PA system, were recorded by me standing atop a garbage can next to the hot dog stand next to the Yankee Stadium press box, and while balancing and trying not to fall off the damn thing, extending my right arm completely above my head and sticking my microphone into one of the PA speakers hanging from the ceiling. It worked. I got the tape, huh? I mean, you can still hear it. It's more than 43 years ago now, and I'm still proud of it. On the other hand, as I recalled this, my rotator cuff passed out just by remembering the pain. I've done all the damage I can do here to my rotator cuff. Thank you for listening. If you're not following or subscribing to the podcast, please do so. You don't have to use your own name, I'm told. Here are the credits. Most of the music, including our theme here from Beethoven's Ninth, was arranged, produced, and performed by Brian Ray and John Philip Chanel. They are the Countdown musical directors. All orchestration and keyboards by John Philip Chanel. Guitars, bass, and drums by Brian Ray, produced by TKO Brothers. Other Beethoven selections have been arranged and performed by No Horns Allowed. The sports music is the Olbermann theme from ESPN2, and it was written by Mitch Warren Davis, courtesy of ESPN Inc. Musical comments by Nancy Faust, the best baseball stadium organist ever, and survivor of Disco Demolition Night in 1979. Our announcer today was Larry David. Everything else was pretty much my fault. So that's Countdown for this, the 723rd day since Donald Trump's first attempted coup against the democratically elected government of the United States. Arrest him now, while we still can. A new edition tomorrow. Until then, I'm Keith Olbermann. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and good luck. Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets,
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters. Every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.